Hello and welcome to episode 178 of Speak Beastie for May 28th, 2023. I'm Shannon.
I'm Anne.
I'm Lizzie.
And I'm Marjolaine.
And if you're in the U.S., it's Memorial Day weekend. Happy Memorial Day weekend. And thank you for taking time out of your barbecuing and shopping to listen to us.
Beer, USA, bald eagles, fried chicken, country music, kabow.
And in France, it's a Christian thing. So I not only in France, but it's Pentecôte. I don't know what...
Hang on, I'm gonna look it up in French.
Let's see here.
It's Pentecost.
it's Pentecost?
Pentecost, yeah.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, we have that here. It's just not like a.
It's not as much of a thing.
It's like not a Monday natural thing.
Mondays off. Off work, we have a holiday on Monday, but we don't celebrate anything. We just have a long weekend.
Oh, that's nice.
I mean, we don't really do anything, actually, for Memorial Day. It's just an excuse to barbecue.
Pretty much.
If you want to do that.
And run sales. I'm going to get so many promotional emails saying, it's Memorial Day! Honor our veterans by saving 30% off your Hot Topic purchase.
I think it will also be the last day of the Festival de Cannes, so, yeah.
Well.
Cinema-related stuff.
All sorts of stuff happening. Well, since it is Memorial Day weekend, actually, this week's Patreon supporter is pretty appropriate, because this week's Patreon supporter is the family of Mike McDonald. Mike was one of our first supporters when we first started the pod. He passed away, and his family has kept his pledge going because of how much the show meant to him. So we thank you, Mike's family. We love you. We miss you, Mike.
We love you. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And thanks for your support. Couldn't do the show without you.
Do we still make fun of Ariel? Or is that past?
We don't usually. But I have sometimes.
Good.
Mike, it's been a minute. Okay. Now it's time for the Phoenix Register.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you, yes you, the magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as $1 a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more. Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean, sweet fly, boy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs Knees and How.
So let's turn it over to some of the news that we have. First up, Warner Brothers has released an anime-themed set of Potter merchandise to celebrate the studio tour opening in Japan, and some of it does include Newt, which we love to see. So if you visit the, I think it's just like harrypottershop.com, you can get, it's like these beautiful anime-style, either like a short glass, mug, notebook, t-shirt, tote bag. And obviously, they also have, you know, the main trio, Dumbledore, Snape. It's a very pretty set if anybody is looking for something new to their collection and they're looking for that anime style. Have you guys gotten a chance to look at it?
I haven't.
It's beautiful. I'm looking for it. I don't see it. Hang on. I'll post a link in the chat. It's called, like, the Harry Potter Yume collection. And it's, like, inspired by cherry blossom. So I'll post a link in the group chat so y'all can see it, because it is a very beautiful collection of merch. And the Niflheim looks really cute.
Yeah. That's very interesting. It's not only animes. It has, I mean, the newt one, it has this Art Deco background. Very fancy. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love this style.
Yeah, no, I saw it and I was like, oh god, this is testing my resolve. Because
yeah.
I love a mug. And there's like a chopstick set and coasters, just like anything you can think of that they could put these really cute like anime style images on. They're on.
The glasses are very fancy with
they are
gold foiling on the edges and yeah.
Next up, we have some park updates for Epic Universe. This is actually written by Shadow.
Oh my god! We know a celebrity.
So the article is Epic Universe contractors previously worked on Hogwarts, Potter and the Forbidden Journey, Toothless Model, and Jurassic World figures. So a couple of contractors are being brought back for Epic Universe, which is very exciting. One of them is Dynamic Attractions. They actually worked on the mechanical equipment for Forbidden Journey. Another company is a Michigan-based one. I believe it's pronounced KUKA. Robotics Corp. Mm. They've been hired for electronic equipment work. They're the ones that actually did the robotic arm for Forbidden Journey. So if anybody has gone on that ride, you know exactly what we're talking about. It's what holds your cart physically in place and moves you up and down and around. It's definitely one of the coolest things that I think for like theme parks that has been created in the last, you know, like 10, 20 years. I'm trying not to think about how long the park has been open and avoid crisis. So this could mean that they're constructing a similar ride system for Epic Universe.
Oh my god, you're just making me think about how long it's been open.
And the current plan is still to model the Potter side of the park after, Marjo, I'm going to need you to say that.
Place cachée.
Yep, so the version of Diagon in Crimes of Grindelwald. Construction photos reveal a version of the Arch Gateway built in the 1300s Paris. The Wizarding World ride, however, is going to be used to transport guests to the UK Ministry of Magic for a ride featuring Umbridge. You can actually see photos of the construction at the link, and I'm sure we'll put that in the show notes. You'll primarily see the entryway and the skeletons of the building. And this article was also done by Shannon, so times two,
what?
Shannon.
If you go, all of our construction photos on Universal Parks News today, we source from Bio Reconstruct, who's an aerial photographer on Twitter. So if you, I just pulled up Bio Reconstruct, and they have a picture of an owl at the top of their page.
Oh,
right,
cute.
But yeah, so you can always check out their page. They don't, you know, visit Epic Universe often, but well, obviously they don't actually visit Epic Universe, but
you know, like,
it's not open yet.
I can't believe that they're sticking with this Dark Universe land, considering that Dark Universe did not take off at all.
I know, I think they just wanted to use that name.
I mean, yeah, fair, the Universal monsters are iconic, but why are they calling it the Dark Universe land?
I'm still excited for this side of the park. It'll be really cool to see everything they come up with. I personally just don't understand why we're doing France and then throwing Umbridge into it. Like, I just...
Yeah.
I get the ministry aspect of it, but, like, I'd rather not.
Well, and, like, Universal so far has been very careful about their timelines. Like, I talked about this last time, but, like, Diagon Alley is very specifically set in, like, Deathly Hallows Part 2 at Hogsmeade. It's very specifically set around the time of the Triwizard Tournament. Hmm. And so the fact that they are not being very careful with the timeline here, I mean, maybe they took a lesson from Galaxy's Edge and thought that hewing too close to a timeline that is otherwise unpopular with fans is going to be a problem.
Yeah.
So that they're being less rigid with timelines now, but I don't care for it.
Yeah, I could have gone without seeing Umbridge ever again, personally.
Maybe Imelda Staunton's the only actor they can get.
Oh!
That's not an insult to Imelda Staunton, necessarily. Maybe it is, but...
No, I know, I don't think it is. I think it's more like a, ooh.
Yeah. I I'm hoping to do a Patreon extra where I go over some of the more Epic Universe stuff in details, including the, like, spoilers of the ride from what we know about it right now.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
So maybe I can correct a little thing from your article.
Okay, yeah.
You got the date wrong for the Port Saint-Denis. It's not the late 1300s, it's the late 1600s.
Rip. I honestly might have just kind of typo. Hold on, I'll fix it right now. Leave me alone. Nobody has to know.
Nobody except everyone listening to this episode. Hi! Oh, I'm still looking through this article. There's a dual coaster. Ooh!
Yes, because Dueling Dragons worked out so well.
I'm going to ride it once, saying, boy, howdy, that was fun. I never have to do it again. And which is exactly what I said when I did Slinky Dog Dash and the Guardians of the Galaxy coaster last time we were in Florida. I was like, whoa, that was great. I never have to do it again. Anyway, I really wish Lizzie hadn't said anything about how long the Wizarding World's been open, because it's reminding me that my in-laws took us there for our first anniversary when we've married for 13 years.
Wow.
Gosh.
So thank you, Lizzie, for this news, very exciting news about the park especially. And now I see owls coming our way. At least one. So we have an owl from Sal on Facebook, and he replies to our last podcast question about Newt's trap. You know, the trap that would be in Newt's case that we didn't have the chance to see because the case got blown up, I guess. So Sal's respond, magical creature tongue. And I mean from every creature in his case. They would fly out into the face of the person trying to steal it, if open.
I love that.
Personally, I'm a huge fan.
Yeah.
I don't think Newt would ever do it, unfortunately. I think he has too much respect for his animals, for the people.
The trap are designed by Dumbledore, I think. And I think Dumbledore would
do it. Oh, Dumbledore would think it
was hilarious.
Yeah. What I love about that is that Newt is probably very used to being covered in magical creature dung, so if he opened the case, it wouldn't be, like, a huge deal to him. He'd just be like, aw, man. But Dumbledore would have really taught him his lesson about, like, hey, man, I told you that you might not have the real case, and you shouldn't look in it.
Yeah, and this comment make me realize that I really want to know more about magical creature tongue. Because I realize, like, what an hippogriff's tongue looks like. Does it, is more horse shit or bird shit? I really want to know. It's a very important question.
What if it's like bird poop, but like the size of a horse poop?
Oh my gosh. This is making me think of, this is making me think of Jurassic Park.
Well, because I mean, it does make sense that it'd be something that Newt would be have some interest in, because dung is super important to natural scientists.
Yeah, I'm sure the full version of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the book, includes that, and it got caught in the Muggle version, and that's a shame.
Absolutely, you're so right.
No, 100%, because even
he had
at
pages and pages.
Pages.
Do you think they studied the dung, like, in their Chair of Magical Creatures classes?
Oh, probably not.
Yeah.
Like, do you think they had, like, tests where they had diagrams and it was, like, match the dung?
The school board was probably, like, no.
I think
that's, like, maybe,
kind of
like, 6th or 7th year, like, when you're specializing.
Yeah.
Mm.
That's true.
You're not going to make the 3rd years dig around in a pile of crap.
No? I mean,
shall we take it to the main discussion?
Let's do it.
All right. For the main discussion this week, we are talking about scenes 87 through 90 of the Secrets of Dumbledore screenplay. Let me just grab my screenplay.
Yep,
here
I'm
it is.
I make a lot of background noise, so sorry.
All right, so scene. Ooh, ASMR, book pages.
I was going to say, we need to start adding page numbers to these things.
Oh, yeah, I just use the Kindle version, so I don't know what the page numbers are.
Well, the page number in the hardcover, I made it as a paperback, 226. All right, scene 87. Exteriors, streets/alleys, Bhutan, same time, day. We've just been going through this whole section. So we're following Dumbledore right now. He's looking over at the chaos of the case traps, the chaos that he has wrought, and a snitch buzzes down toward him and he catches it midair and pockets it.
Respectfully, where did that come from?
Yeah.
from
Theseus's case.
But where did Dumbledore being able to catch a snitch come from?
Well, okay, but so I rewatched last night and the snitch, it's not like it just kind of goes like, bada, 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 bada.
And so what kind of comes snitch down is that?
It's just like, what's up? I'm here.
Is it programmed?
Snitch? You know, like ones that babies play with?
But the snitch has memories from who got it first. So that's a new theory. I think, Dumbledore was a seeker in another life and he used a snitch that he actually caught during game. No?
Well, no, snitches that have flesh memories, so it's not necessarily the first person to catch it, it's the first person to touch it with bare skin. So he could have just bought a snitch at Quality Quidditch Supplies, gotten his bare hand on it, and then, charmed it to come back to him later.
Is it too early in the morning for me to get on my soapbox about how angry I still am about the whole let's change James Potter from being a chaser to a seeker?
I have a ginormous ice coffee for that. Show.
Because I'm still mad about it. I'm still angry. But, no, isn't it also canon that Harry played with a baby snitch as a kid? Isn't that a thing? Or was it? Yes. Okay. Cool.
It has never been established that Dumbledore played Quidditch. But I don't think it's ever been established that he didn't play Quidditch.
That's true. So.
I don't think it's ever been established that anything that Dumbledore ever really did was ever possibly truthful, or we even know the truth.
That's so true.
And that's one secret I'll never tell. You know you love me. XOXO. I'm Dumbledore.
All right, well, that mystery solved. So, snitch, and then Aberforth appears.
No, about the snitch, I just it reminds me that first when we got these pictures and these images in the trailer of Dumbledore catching a snitch in a non-location at the time, and I think we were pretty sure it was important, and we did some theories, and I remember that I thought that Albus would hide the blood path into the snitch.
That sounds awesome.
That would have been smart.
You know what? Actually, maybe that still happened.
It was just cut.
Yeah, we didn't see what he did with the snitch.
That would be weird to put it in the case. And then,
listen, it wasn't shown in the movie because it wasn't important to Newt's story. And as we know, these movies are about Newt's commander and no one else.
Obviously.
Of course.
Duh.
So then Aberforth appears out of nowhere and says, how long does he have, as he and Dumbledore walk side by side without never breaking stride.
Yeah.
The drama.
I love this shot. That's so
It's cool. A good shot.
It's so sad, too, because, it's Aberforth accepting that his son will die, but he still wants to do something. So.
Yeah. And this very much strikes me as, Albus being like, hey, we're gonna go do this thing. We're gonna try to rescue Credence. And Aberforth's like, I'm not gonna go. And Albus is like, all right, but we're gonna be here at this time. And Aberforth's like, whatever. And Lily shows up and Albus is like, yeah.
And he's like, don't say anything.
I know you.
Shut up.
We see the phoenix fly overhead and that transitions into scene 88, which is exterior street, Bhutan, day. This one doesn't say same time, so it could be at any time.
Oh no, next day, next week.
Yeah,
I have showed up a week later.
It's been a long walk.
Yeah.
So then we see Credence looking ever more pale in a throng of Lou's supporters, weakened and in pain, and he leans against a pillar before steeling himself once more and moving on. Sad.
Wait a second. Why are these people in pain?
No. Credence is in pain.
Oh.
they're all feeling his pain. I'm in pain because Credence is in pain.
Yeah. We've all become very strong and empaths.
We were watching this last night, and the closed captioning said wistful music playing during the scene. Right. And so Chris is kind of like half watching, and he sees that, and he goes, "Don't tell me how to feel, HBO Max."
Careful, at the time of this release, it'll be Max now.
My bad. Whoa. Don't tell me how to feel, Max.
Don't even get me started about that whole reprint.
That's even better. So we do have in this section a quote from David Heyman, the producer, about Credence. Credence yearns, like so many of Joe's characters, to belong, and he feels in his heart that he cannot count on Grindelwald. He's also very sick. The Obscura seems to be taking him over more and more. So, as he faces his own mortality, he is trying to figure out just where he belongs at this point in his life.
Come on, David. We were already sad.
I know, it is like, I didn't need this quote. You just put this in here to have more sadness.
The fact that, like, at this point in the movie, they're like, Credence is like, hey, maybe I can't count on Grindelwald.
I know.
This is where
What brought you to that revelation, Credence?
You're feeling the sadness, and this is when you put in the Amos degree. My boy!
Oh my god.
Look at my boy!
It's too much. So then we go to scene 89. Exterior, narrow alley leading upward, Bhutan Day. Also could be at any time, doesn't have to be at the same time.
Could be next week.
Yeah.
Could be last week.
What's the timeline?
So Jacob is just chilling, I guess. He doesn't have a case anymore, so he's just walking around. He passes the mysterious green-robed figure, and then another figure grabs him. It's Queenie!
And I just gotta say, really good close-up on Hermione in this scene, and she might be like a magic Nazi, but her nails are impeccable. And she's just like got this whole overall like maroon look, like she's got like the maroon dress and the head wrap and her nails coordinate, and I really need to tweet like the makeup designer on this movie and see if I can get an ID on that polish, because it's a great color for fall.
I mean, you know that villains always have the best looks, so.
It's true.
There is no argument, Your Honor.
Although, to be fair, Queenie had the best looks before she was a villain, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
I rest my case.
Yeah. So, she's like, hey, you're in danger. Like, yeah, Queenie.
I'll be.
And then she's being all sad and pathetic. And it's like,
oh my god. She's gonna go for her like that.
Yeah. I mean.
She's like, I can't come home, it's too late for me, some mistakes are just too big. And Jacob's being like, listen to me, you know, all I got is us. And she says, I don't love you anymore, which is so harsh. Gosh, I forgot about that line.
It's like that in the first Game of Thrones book, when like the Stark kids are chasing off their direwolves, and they're all like, get out of here, I don't love you, and like throwing rocks.
Like I said, it's giving old Yeller, which I've never seen. I just know that it's very emotionally damaging.
Yeah.
Am I thinking of the right sad dog movie?
I don't know.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't watch those.
Same. Yeah. But I don't know. Sometimes I reread the scene and I'm like, what if you just said, like, just completely changed the inflection of your voice? It would almost be comical, even though this is really sad. And I'm not trying to make fun of her, but, you know.
I don't like this scene very much. I like what it's doing.
Yeah.
But I don't know what's bothering me, if it's the writing of the dialogues, the acting maybe. I don't think it's the best.
No, for sure, reading it, I was like, this dialogue is nonsensical.
Yeah.
Like, this dialogue, like, I think in the movie, they act it out well, that you, like, understand what's going on. But if this was a book, this would be like, what are they saying? Like, out of context, this just, like, is a weird conversation.
They're going to find us.
Yeah, no, maybe that's the problem. It's an out of context period. I mean, I like the some mistakes are just too big.
Yeah.
But that's a full storyline that needs to be developed.
Yes.
To, I don't know. We don't have a real redemption arc for Queenie. We just have this dialogue.
Yeah, we just kind of see at the beginning that obviously she regrets stuff, but we don't get... Part of it is that we don't, you know, we see these scenes of her throughout the movie, but we don't get to see her talking to anyone about her feelings mm-hmm. until now. So it's like, mm-hmm. we've talked about this before, where it's like, we don't really know when she realized that she made a mistake. Like, was it when she saw Grindelwald kill the Chilin? Was it earlier than that?
Yeah, and you did more. You need some action, and the only action that she did before that, this scene, is the little quick wand thing and
yeah.
To help Jacob escaping, I think. So, but that's the only thing. So, and you can miss it if you're
yeah.
not paying attention. So, yeah, that's not enough.
I feel like the movie needed a scene with Queenie and Kama. Because
yeah.
Kama also gets, like, dropped in this movie and doesn't have much of a plot. He says, like, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So if there had been a scene with the two of them, even, like, talking in code, like,
yeah,
I think
mm-hmm.
that would have really helped both of their stories.
Yes.
Yeah, and there is this potential cutscene that we just got a few shots of it, of Queenie maybe trying to leave and
right.
Grindelwald keeping her. So
yes.
again, I think I think we missed that too. So
she says, "I don't love you anymore," and Jacob says, "You're the worst liar in the world, Queenie Goldstein." And then there are church bells, and he's like, "You hear that? That's a sign."
I never understand. That's the first time I understood that. And just because it says in the text it's church bells, I didn't realize it was church bells.
Yeah. That's reading it, I was like, oh, like, it's wedding bells. Although him pointing it out is a little bit much.
And why would it be church in Bhutan?
It's not church bells, though, because the church bells have that bong, bong, like,
yeah,
this
that's
is like,
not
this
church
is more
bells.
Of a gentle jingling sound.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish she had been like, what do you mean that's a sign?
A sign of what?
Sign of what?
Maybe that church is more into the, you know, the jingle jingle than the bong bong.
Because
certainly possible.
I think the first
that's
thing
it,
I thought
title.
When seeing the movie, the first thing I thought it was alarm bells, and it was a sign that they would be caught.
Oh.
So it doesn't make any sense of Jacob saying, "You hear that? That's a sign.
It's a sign that we're gonna get caught.
We will die."
I think it reminded me of like Peter Pan fairy.
Yes.
And I was like, "Oh, he does believe in fairies." So then they hug, and
that's nice.
Yeah.
Thank you.
He's like, "You know what Dumbledore said to me? He said that I got a full heart. He's wrong. I'm always going to have room in there for you," which is a sweet line. And also, I really appreciate Jacob for saying Dumbledore is wrong about something.
Yes.
Because no one else is willing to say it.
How would everything have gone if somebody would just occasionally be like, "You know, Dumbledore, I don't think you got the right
idea.
I think
you're wrong."
It's a very nice line from Jacob, though. It's very
yeah.
cute.
It is so mm-hmm. sweet. Like, I was getting a little verklempt.
Yeah, I think this scene is, like, there's a lot of good lines. It's like, we had a lot of good lines we wanted to include, but we only had 30 seconds
yeah.
to have this scene between them. So it's just
yeah,
kind of like these good lines, one after the other, that don't all feel like they're actually responding to each other.
Yeah, it almost feels like an afterthought, like they realized after finishing writing the story, "Oh, crap, we need to have the reunion scene between Jacob and Queenie."
Yeah.
"Oh, we have these lines, and for these lines to make sense, we just need to another scene just before where Dumbledore says this nice thing to Jacob." And I don't
yeah.
know if it's just not really built up well, but
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And it doesn't really feel like a reunion scene.
No, not
like,
at all.
You wanted something bigger.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Like, we've been wanting this whole movie, but there's
yeah.
no,
It's a, you gotta let me go. I'll never let go.
And that yeah.
Goes. Yeah.
And then you turn around and they're married. And you're like, oh, I guess he didn't let go.
So they get surrounded by figures as a tear trickles down her cheek. And then our last little scene, lots of little scenes in this section. Exterior bridge, Bhutan, same time. Day. This one's at the same time.
Maybe the same time means that it's literally happening at the same time. And yeah, like don't time. Say yeah. It's successively happening. I don't know.
Yeah. So Newt is watching some Santos supporters cross a bridge that rises into the sky. They disappear through a portal pathway across. And so then he mingles in with the crowds and goes through this portal that takes them to, spoilers for the next scene, it takes them to the base of the eerie, not to the top of the stairs, still gotta go up those.
Especially you, Credence. You walk up those stairs.
These stairs, I've decided, are actually my mortal enemy in this movie. They make me so angry that these wizards have to walk up and down these stairs.
Is it the amount of them? Is it the structural integrity? Is it the width? Is it the depth?
No, it's the fact that they have to walk up and down them. The stairs themselves are fine, and I think that they are probably accurate to stuff like this that is in Bhutan. Probably wider than real ones, so that they had room to film. But no, it's just like, why can't they apparate up and down them? Or why can't this portal take them to the top?
I guess it makes sense that, like, there would probably be, like, anti-apparition wards or something. You can, like, kind of keep an eye on where people are at all times. So if they're walking up 10 bajillion stairs.
But there isn't, because Grindelwald is apparating at the end of the...
Just kidding. Huh? This movie has no internal logic.
Well, maybe he can just do what he wants, because Dumbledore can just do what he wants. He literally said that in freaking 6, where he's like, you can't operate out of Hogwarts? What's this? Yes, I can.
Like, I just told everyone that, no one tries it.
Yeah.
No kid.
He's teaching Harry, and he's like, literally, try it. And then he tries it, and he falls on his face. He's like, no.
Well, now.
Just me.
Yeah. So.
But I mean, I guess, yeah, like, some kind of a blockage would make sense, you know, to prevent, like, I don't know, an assassination attempt.
I guess so.
I think it might have been, like, appropriate here, but that's fine.
And that's the end of this section of the screenplay. So, we're still not
to the end.
At the top of the stairs.
Yeah. Still haven't gotten to us and Credence where the struggle is real to get to the top of the stairs.
Does Credence have to walk up the stairs and then back down the stairs? No wonder he's dying.
I mean, I would be too.
Two. Cardio.
And Newt is about to, like, run up the stairs.
Yeah, we don't need that. Enough. That's enough. Show off somewhere else.
Imagine if we have one scene by one step, one scene, one step, one scene.
Oh, jeez, my God. Newt goes up a step. Scene 25, Newt goes up a step. Scene 26, Newt goes up a step.
Same time, day.
Scene 28,000.
Same time, day.
Newt stops to catch his breath. Woo, he says.
That's a lot of steps.
I'm already halfway there.
Scene 28,001, we see Credence at the bottom of the stairs. Not today, he says, and leaves.
Oh my gosh. There's so much going on here, and the steps do not help.
No.
I'm still rereading the Queenie and Jacob dialogue, and, like, I'm reading it to myself with, like, a version where Jacob is, like, very emotional, and not, like, whiny, but, like, pleading, and then also of another version where Jacob is more just, like, gruff about it and forceful, and I'm like, I don't know which I like better in my own headcanon.
It's just like, if you read it without knowing how they deliver it in the movie, she grabs him and pulls him aside and goes, you're in danger, all right. You need to leave. And he says, well, dot, dot, dot. As he starts to speak, she puts a finger over his lips. I can't come home. It's too late for me. Some mistakes are just too big. And he says, can you listen to me? And it's like, all you said was, well.
The emotional side would be, can you listen to me? And the gruff one would be, no, I'm not going to do it. It wouldn't be good.
It's pretty good, Jacob, though, that you did just there.
Really? The masculine, like, in my head is, like, a ridiculous gruff where it's like, can you listen?
Oh, my God, he's Batman.
Yeah.
I'm Batman. I don't care.
I don't care. All I got is us. I'm making sense without us. Now I'm just going, like, country western. You're the worst liar in the world, people.
You're the worst liar in the world.
Yeah, that's a sign. Tell me it. Close your eyes. Please, close your eyes. You know what Dumbledore said to me? He said that I got a full heart. He's wrong. I'm always gonna have room in there for you. Look at me, Queenie Goldstein. I think this is all because I've had to do a lot of rebrands at work from a court television channel to a cowboy movie channel, and everyone's been really mad about losing their court television channel, and I'm like, yeah, same. I don't care about this cowboy television channel either. All it does is play country westerns all day. I don't get why it exists, but it's here now. Sorry. Sorry about that. So, wow. It's got country on the brain.
So, wow. When are we getting the Patreon of you just re-recording all of Jacob's lines as a cowboy?
If I can figure out the right voice, I will.
Yes!
Yeah.
I can't come home. It's too late for me. My legs are just too big. There's no time. I was found.
You know what, actually?
But it won't be long before they find me. They're going to find me.
This conversation does actually make more sense if it's transplanted into a Western.
Thank you.
Like,
oh yeah, like maybe he's a sheep wrestler or something, and like,
yeah.
Or she's a sheep wrestler, and that's the mistake she's made. It's too big to come home. She's wrestled too many sheep.
Rewrite it as a Hallmark film, but it's competing cattle ranchers.
Oh,
daughter of the most popular cattle rancher. She's like, I can't do it.
This is beautiful.
See, we can fix this, guys. Don't worry. Who needs film news when we can do this? And that's the main discussion, y'all!
That's the main discussion.
Yay!
Thanks for listening. Anne, do you want to take us into the newt cave?
I would love to take you into the newt cave.
I'm so ready for this.
Oh, my God.
So, this is one that I have been wanting to do for a long time, and the stars have finally aligned.
I will say, I do think everything that has happened this morning is because you decided to do this new case.
It's kind of a bad luck, guys. But
this is two whole pages.
Oh, that's a link?
Yep.
Oh.
I have an entire Google Doc about this.
This is two whole pages, like 11-point font, single spaces.
For those who obviously can't see our notes, it just says Newt Case and then the name, because I'm not going to give that away. And I'm like, dang, okay, I guess Anne's really just going off the cuff. Like, she really just has a lot to say about this. No, it's a link.
No, it is a link.
Oh, and that's a single space. That ain't bold nothing. Oh, I'm ready. All right. I'm set.
Okay. We open the new case. It is November 15th, 1966.
Whoa.
Two young couples, Roger and Linda Scarberry and Steve and Mary Millette, are out for a late night drive in the countryside around the small town of Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Near the TNT area, a former World War II munitions plant, they spot a large, whitish figure. Quote, about 6 or 7 feet tall, having a wingspan of 10 feet, and red eyes about 2 inches in diameter and about 6 inches apart. Frightened by the vision, they drive off, only to realize that the thing is following them, gliding over the top of the car. As they pull into Point Pleasant, it vanishes. They drive into town to try and get help, but as soon as they leave town, they see it again. Quote, it seemed to be waiting on us, Millette said in an interview. However, when they shine their headlights on it, it runs into a nearby field and vanishes. The next day, they go to the police and provide statements. they emphasized they weren't drinking. And I put that in there because every single article is like, the police said they weren't drinking. So
yeah.
That night, 7 more people see the figure. The sightings spread like wildfire. Gravediggers see it near a cemetery. A woman spots it by a golf course. And a man swears that it causes strange patterns on his TV and then kidnaps his dog.
Oh.
What's a strange pattern on...
That's what I'm saying.
Well, okay, so like, sometimes TVs will get like static.
Yeah, no, I get that.
So I'm guessing like something like that. Maybe Huey just got some static that he wasn't expecting and he said it was a strange pattern on his TV caused by this thing.
But like if it kidnaps his dog, does that mean like it's like, you know, kind of a ring situation, like reaches out through the TV in the middle of the static and goes, yeet?
No, I think he saw the strange patterns on his TV and then his dog vanished.
Oh, okay, cool. Thank you for that.
This all tracks so far.
Yeah. that's what happened. News outlets pick up the stories and the monster gets a name. Mothman.
I'm shook.
Over the course of the next 12 months, over 100 people spot the creature in and around Point Pleasant. Though basic details change, the basic information stay the same. Tall, winged, fast in the sky and clumsy on the ground, and glowing red eyes.
Alright, well that's about like 12 people a month, so I guess he chilled a little bit.
Certain people, who call themselves scientists, have claimed that the Mothman was likely a sandhill crane.
Mm-hmm.
Which are birds that are about 6 feet tall, grayish feathers, and they have red feathers at the top of their heads between their eyes. Sandhill cranes are not native to the West Virginia area, so people might not have known what they were looking at, especially if they were driving past it quickly and just catching a glimpse of it in their headlights as they were driving around late at night. But we know the real story, don't we?
We do?
Every time I see a sandhill crane, because they are native to Florida, I just give a little wave to a Mothman.
To a Mothman, yeah. Like that's, Mothman and Mam.
Yeah, I see a lot of sandhill cranes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm looking at it now.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a link in the
Definitely not West Virginia.
There's some funky little birds. Not little.
They are big. They are funky big birds. Like, they are like the size of a guy.
Not all of them, though, I will say. Most of the ones I see around here are like half the size of a person.
Okay.
I don't get too close, though, so I can't be sure. That's a Mothman.
They are
I'm
small,
not going to
just because they are far away that they look small, maybe.
That's it. Shannon's just like, that might be a large bird, but I'm on this side of the parking lot. I'm not getting any closer.
Yeah. Literally, though, when I worked at Disney, there was a family of sandhill cranes that lived in the cast member parking lot. They
That's
might
so cute. There.
And so sometimes I just see these sandhill cranes walking around.
And you're like, hey, what's up, Mothman?
Hey, Mothman. Anyway.
So, the Silver Bridge was built in 1928 to span the Ohio River that acts as the boundary between Point Pleasant and Gallipolis, Ohio. At the time it was built, cars were significantly lighter than they would become later in the century, and no fail-safes were built in, meaning that if one part failed, the whole thing would go.
That's good.
Exactly 13 months after the first Mothman sighting, on December 15th, 1967, traffic was heavy on the Silver Bridge as people traveled back and forth between Gallipolis and Point Pleasant to do their Christmas shopping. During rush hour, an eye bar on the top of the bridge snapped, and the entire bridge collapsed into the icy waters of the Ohio River. Ultimately, 46 people died and another 9 were injured. Naturally, it didn't take long for people to connect the strange appearance of the Mothman to the Silver Bridge collapse, and the creature's role as harbinger of doom was sealed. After the bridge's collapse, Mothman was never seen again.
Well, debatable. I see him all the time.
Yeah, she sees him all the time. The Disney cast member parking lot.
John Keel, a paranormal journalist, took an interest in the Mothman phenomena and the rash of UFO sightings in Point Pleasant about a decade later, which also, interestingly, was the origin of the Men in Black, and wrote a book about it called The Mothman Prophecies, which tied together Mothman, the UFO sightings, and the Silver Bridge collapse. The book was published in 1975. It was later adapted into a movie of the same name, starring Richard Gere and Deborah Messing in 2002.
Love Deborah.
She's great.
She's great.
That same year, following a brainstorming session on how to get people to visit the town, Point Pleasant held its first Mothman Festival.
Oh,
now held annually during the third weekend of September, the Mothman Festival hosts experts on the paranormal and UFOs, has live bands and movie viewings, and even a Mothman walk-around character that you can get pictures with.
Hard pass.
In 2003, sculptor Bob Roach unveiled the Mothman statue in downtown Point Pleasant. It's polished steel, 12 feet tall, has an 8-pack, and a very well-defined butt. And, much to my husband's consternation, arms. His consternation is based on the fact that Mothman shouldn't have arms. But what he should be worried about is that Mothman's big, muscular arms are all the better to hold me with.
Oh my god.
Finally, in 2005, the Mothman Museum opened in a small storefront next to the Mothman statue. It includes contemporaneous newspaper clippings about the initial Mothman sightings, biological information on the main players, the original handwritten police statements given by the Mellets and the Scarberries the day after they first saw the Mothman, the world's largest collection of the Mothman props and costumes, a recreation of a diner from Point Pleasant with a Mothman quilt on the wall, as well as newspaper clippings about the Silver Bridge collapse and the mysterious appearances of UFOs and Men in Black in Point Pleasant in the 1970s. If you're in Point Pleasant, the Mothman Museum is well worth a visit. It's only $5 and a lot of fun. The gift shop and the museum's sister store next door all have all the Mothman and related cryptid merch you could ever want, including the very cute Mothman Squishmallow that is currently sitting in my lap and has cursed this recording.
I was literally going to be like, so you've been here then?
Finally, let's talk about how the public perception of Mothman has changed. Back in the 60s, Mothman was a bringer of bad tidings. Now, if you go onto Instagram and search the hashtag MothmanIs, you'll find some of these hashtags popping up. Mothman is real. Mothman is real and he's a good boy. Mothman is my boyfriend. Mothman is my husband. Mothman is my dad. Mothman is love. Mothman is life. Mothman is hot. Mothman is thick, two C's. Mothman is a gay icon. Mothman is real and he's a trans ally. Mothman is trans. Mothman is real and she's a lesbian. And my favorite, Mothman is real and he stole my library card.
This,
so listen.
You created half of it.
Exposed Anne.
It's so funny because you know how Instagram will show you like how many uses of a hashtag are out there? Almost all of these are less than 100, and I've definitely contributed at least 5 to the Mothman is my boyfriend.
Oh my god.
It does make me think of the Taylor Swift song, Mothman is my boyfriend, Mothman is a god.
Yeah.
Karma.
So
that's the song.
That is the story of Mothman.
So listen, I'm looking at this statue, and first of all, you're right. Why is the 8-pack required?
I don't know.
But you know what? That's not even the part that bothers me the most.
Is it the arms? Are you also happy that he has arms?
No, it's not the arms. It's the fact that at night the eyes glow.
Yeah. Yep.
Why?
Because Mothman has glowing red eyes. That's like iconic.
They said, nightmare fuel, inject it straight into your brain.
Yeah, so as Lizzie
correctly, obviously he needs the arms to kidnap a dog.
As Lizzie has ascertained, I did go to the Mothman Museum. Actually, if you are a Patreon, then on the day that you hear this episode, my photos for my visit will drop on Patreon. And when we're going to visit our families, we always drive through Point Pleasant. And, like, I always would see the sign for the Mothman Museum. I'm like, babe, can we go? But we never have time. But this last time we had some extra time. So I was like, please. And we got to go. It was so great.
Had some extra time, she says. No, she made time.
I was like, look.
I want to add to my now list of two Mothman parody songs. That Mothman has snow white hair and glowing red eyes. He can walk through walls, disappear, and fly.
Yes!
He was much more unique than the other guys.
He's gonna catch them all because he's the Mothman.
All right, yeah.
Here's my one question. So you're saying that Mothman essentially started the Men in Black?
Yeah, no, the Men in Black started from the rash of UFO sightings in Point Pleasant. And, like, the townspeople say that mysterious men in well-tailored black suits would show up and ask them about the UFO sightings.
Yeah, and there's no other explanation for that.
No.
I want somebody to blow that up so bad. Not UFOs or Area 51. I just want somebody to blow up that knowledge. Like, I'm surprised that Trump wasn't the one that was like, you know what? Every secret, let's blow it out of the water.
No, of course not, because he wanted to keep the secrets.
I was confused because I never heard about Mothman, and I was,
same.
Okay, I was, how would we translate that in French? So I looked it up, and I understand why we don't.
Oh?
Because a moth in French, it's a night butterfly. So it would be the butterfly man.
Well, I love that.
Not gonna lie, I mean, that's kind of what he looks like if you can get past the teeth and 8-pack.
Yeah, and actually the book and the movie based on the book, so the Mothman Prophecies, in mm-hmm. French, it was translated into the Shadows Prophecies.
Oh! You know what this statue gives me?
What's that?
Bug's Life.
I want to say about the statue, I love the statue. It's beautiful. Bob Roach really went off. It is non-canonical Mothman. This is fandom Mothman.
Yeah, this is definitely fanon Mothman.
So.
He's been yassified. He's gorgeous now.
I can see why they consider him a gay icon. I get it.
Yeah. Oh, especially with the statue.
It's the 8-pack, for sure.
Yeah.
No, like, if I say this, I'm going to end up on a list, so I guess I'm going to end up on a list. You gotta Google Mothman's butt, like, or look on my Instagram feed, because it is America's ass, but, like, you can bounce a penny off that thing.
I tried, and it changed it to button-up shirt, so let me give this another go. I was like, what a popular pattern. I touched Mothman's butt, essential t-shirt.
Hang on, I will see if I can get it on my Instagram feed.
There's
also a video that says, for anyone wondering why Mothman's is so bad.
So everyone wants to know.
Oh my god, it's the Redbubble Gay Pride Mothman butt sticker.
Oh my gosh.
That's good. That's the good stuff. I touched the Mothman's butt in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Well, and Christmas gift is figured out for the
year. Oh, sometimes they put a Santa hat on Mothman.
The Mothman Museum was selling, they do sell like limited edition t-shirt drops, and one of them was the Shiny Heiny Appreciation Society.
Oh my gosh.
And then another one was, I wonder if Mothman thinks about me too.
It is very well defined. Somebody took real care on thing.
As Shannon said, Bob Roach went off and just made it a beautiful...
Can we talk about how this man's name is Bob Roach? All right.
So thank you for this amazing news, Kate. Now it's time for a podcast question. So how would you have liked Queenie and Jacob's reunion to go? We'd love to hear from you, so drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets. And you can also email us at speakbt@gmail.com. And since you are on the internet, you can also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts.
Yes.
Indeed. And while you're at it, check us out online. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram @speakbt. Facebook @facebook.com/speakbc. Also our Tumblr, speakbcpodcast.tumblr.com. And we really can't do the show without you guys, so please support the show on Patreon @patreon.com/speakbc. We have cool stickers, and maybe I will do some more embarrassing voice acting for you guys on there. Maybe.
And we have also amazing bloopers, and for this episode, you definitely need to.
Oh my gosh.
It's every time my audio fails, and it's just screenshots of me going, well, I'm gone, and I'm gone, and I'm gone, oh, gone.
And as I said, it'll be the only place you'll be able to see my exclusive,
Mothman.
Visit to the Mothman Museum, including a picture of me very excitedly pointing at the Mothman statue.
Wonderful. Good.
Complete. I'm Marjolaine.
I'm Shannon.
I'm Lizzie.
And I'm Anne. Case closed.